So it's 3 a.m. and I'm scrolling my feed, and I have this thought that the U.S. isn't really a melting pot. It's a potluck where everyone brought a megaphone instead of food. And I realize that the United States isn't really united at all. It's more like a theme park built and owned by billionaires and plutocrats. And half the rides are broken. The mascots are fighting each other, mostly over grievances that the billionaires fabricated. And the exit sign just directs you back to the gift shop so you can keep buying shit that you don't need. And we still call it the US, but it's basically becoming a totalitarian plutocracy run by a bunch of unhinged oligarchs and tech lords. We are not a country anymore. We're 50 micronations held together mostly by debt and mutual resentment at this point. And we call ourselves red or blue or whatever. Like, we're just rival sports teams. But, here's the reality that too few people want to admit to. Both teams are owned by the same people, same stadium, the same vendors, and the same corporate sponsors. And you're not a player on the field. You're the guy paying $18 for a beer up in the stands, while the franchise owners count revenue from both fan bases. And look, if that sounds like conspiracy talk, relax, because it's really just hidden in plain sight if you just look a little closer. So, Howard Zinn wrote A People's History of the United States decades ago. And in it, he documented how, from the beginning, the elites have been virtuosos at orchestrating horizontal conflict. Setting ordinary people against each other to prevent them from looking up. Poor whites versus enslaved blacks, immigrants versus natives, workers versus workers. It's the same playbook, just different century and with a more refined execution. Now we call them culture wars, but they're really just corporate rebrands of class conflict and control. So think of it like a magician's act. The controversy over bathrooms and books and pronouns, flags, that's the waving hand. Meanwhile, the other hand is quietly raising your taxes to fund the genocides, hiking your rent, your insurance premiums, your grocery bill, while gaslighting you to believe that the economy is somehow strong. It's classic manipulative misdirection, but with focus groups and analytics. And it works beautifully. So Noam Chomsky called it manufacturing consent. Chris Hedges calls it the empire of illusion. Yanis Varoufakis calls it techno-feudalism. Now, these are just different labels for the same phenomenon. A highly skilled and manipulative oligarchy with a marketing division that makes Pepsi versus Coke look like amateur hour. Take a breath and ask yourself, when was the last time that either party in Washington really did something that tangibly improved your material circumstances? And no, a new sticker on your gas pump doesn't count. We're out here arguing over which mascot we prefer while both sides quietly vote to give these billionaires another tax cut. It's like Coke versus Diet Coke, but the factory's the same and you're still thirsty. Now, here's the sick joke. It's not even conspiracy in the smoky room sense anymore. It's just market incentives running on autopilot because outrage is profitable and division keeps wages low. So polarization prevents the working classes from forming coalitions that could actually threaten the donor class. And it's not a bug in the system. It's the feature that keeps the system continuing to function. And now we've built machines to automate the whole process. And social media, it isn't just a distraction. It's a behavioral modification apparatus engineered to harvest outrage. The algorithms figured out that human attention runs on dopamine and cortisol. And I would argue that at this point in time, manufactured outrage is the most renewable energy source on the planet. You know, they don't care which ideological team you're on. They only care how long you'll stay angry enough to scroll through ads for mattresses or whatever. Now, I'm not immune to this either. Years ago, when I still used Facebook, I'd occasionally catch myself arguing with a stranger about some fabricated, some fabricated issue to monetize our distraction. And I would think, why the hell am I doing this? And then I'd realize, because it's easier than looking up who just bought my city's water supply. So the richest people in the U.S. learned to weaponize our cognitive bandwidth. They don't need to censor us. They just drown us in a bunch of noise. And, you know, ultimately they keep us busy hating each other so that we don't even notice that we're just tenants now in our homes, our jobs, and now even in our minds. So Varoufakis calls it rentier capitalism. You don't own anything anymore. I mean, you may have noticed that you are now renting and subscribing to everything. You pay recurring fees for everything. It's your software, your car, your healthcare, student loans, your data plan, and on and on. And while we're screaming at each other over symbols, they're collecting the rent hand over fist. So every time you think that those people are the enemy, whether you're left, right, or somewhere lost in between, really pause and ask yourself, who really benefits from me believing that? Because if you zoom out far enough, there's really only one conflict happening here, and that's class war. And you've already been drafted, whether you know it or not. Now, sometimes I think we're already in a second civil war, but it's mostly in the form of a strange digital context or something. Because as Terrence McKenna used to say, it's going to get weirder and weirder. So there's no Gettysburg, no handlebar mustache generals, no uniforms or, you know, bayonets. Just millions of people in separate information bubbles, armed with memes instead of muskets, fighting proxy battles in the comment sections. And yeah, it's quieter than traditional warfare, but arguably no less harmful. I mean, you don't need bullets when you can fragment people's sense of shared reality. And now with AI, it's about to get exponentially worse. We've got deep fakes, personalized propaganda, bots that know your psychological triggers better than your therapist. All of these are scaling up the capacity to divide us even further. So the next viral outrage you encounter likely won't be human generated. It'll probably be an algorithm testing which wedge issue keeps you scrolling the longest. All right, here's a little historical parallel. In the 19th century, factory owners figured out that if Irish and black workers ever organized together, they'd have real leverage. And that prospect terrified them. So they invested in racist propaganda to foster and maintain division between them. Now, let's fast forward 150 years and we've got tech companies doing it automatically at scale. There's no pamphlets needed, just algorithms that analyze your behavioral patterns and feed you the content, you know, that's calibrated to maximize your antagonism toward your designated outgroup. You want to know why the middle class feels like it's dissolving? Well, because it is. It's not, you're not imagining it. I mean, at this point, it's common knowledge that real wages have been stagnant for decades, while housing and healthcare and education costs and everything else have skyrocketed. And meanwhile, the top 1% are vacuuming up wealth like a Dyson on steroids. But instead of organizing against structural inequality, we're too busy arguing about who gets to use which bathroom in the basement of the castle that we're all locked out of anyway. Now, if this sounds bleak, good. It is bleak. But I'm not here to sell you hope-flavored chewing gum. I'm here to say that the only thing that genuinely scares concentrated power is horizontal solidarity. The prospect of a fractured nation recognizing they have more in common with each other than with their supposed representatives and oligarch overlords. I mean, look, folks, the game only works if we keep playing by their rules. Okay, now let's zoom out from the screaming comment section for a second and actually look at the board. Because this isn't really a board game. It's a casino where the house doesn't always just win. It owns the dice, and of course those dice are loaded. So while we're busy arguing over which books should be in the library, private equity firms are quietly buying up entire neighborhoods like they're collecting monopoly properties. Hedge funds are becoming your landlord, which is about as comforting as it sounds. And the richest 1% now own more wealth than the entire middle class combined. A concentration of wealth that would probably make medieval kings jealous. But sure, let's keep screaming at the school board about drag queen story hour. That'll definitely solve your rent doubling. Howard Zinn wrote that history isn't just a boring list of dates. It's the story of who has power and how they keep it. So, Zinn showed how every time working class people got close to actually organizing, the ruling class would inevitably and conveniently roll out a new enemy to worry about instead. Bread, circuses, witch hunts, red scares, super predators, welfare queens, caravans. I mean, it's like they have a greatest hits playlist of distractions and they just keep hitting shuffle. And then they occasionally make up some new ones. So Chris Hedges calls this the Empire of Illusion, a place where celebrity gossip and manufactured rage replace actual civic life. Now, he argues that we're already living in a post-democracy corporate oligarchy. Just one with really good marketing. We elect middle managers, not leaders. And they don't represent you. They manage you like livestock with voting rights. And now, those managers have algorithms doing the heavy lifting. And algorithms don't take sick days or ask for raises. They never get tired. They just keep feeding you exactly the content that makes you mad enough to keep on scrolling. And they've got your number literally and figuratively. They don't care which team jersey you wear. They only care how long you'll watch the ads between the plays. Now, Noam Chomsky spent his whole career basically saying, hey, mass media isn't informing you, it's programming you. What's new is that now the programming is personalized, because your social media feed isn't actually news so much as it's a custom-built anger machine designed to keep you clicking and voting against your own wallet. And, you know, ultimately against your own best interests. And Yanis Varoufakis hit the nail on the head with technofeudalism, where he said that we're not really living in capitalism anymore. We're living in some kind of digital serfdom that wears capitalism as a cosmetic. It's really a feudalist corporatism. Now, these new lords, they aren't oil barons like we had in the 19th century or early 20th century. They're actually, I guess that oil barons would be 20th century, but, you know, they're the people who own the platforms now. And we're all addicted to these platforms, just like we were addicted to oil and still are. So they don't actually make anything. They own the toll roads that everyone has to drive on. And you're not the customer, you're the crop that they're harvesting through all of the data they collect from our digital dopamine addiction. You know, it's almost beautiful in its simplicity and effectiveness, because a system this good at extracting wealth doesn't really need smoke-filled back rooms and secret societies. It just needs the right incentives. And again, outrage is profitable. Division stagnates wages. That's really the simple equation. And the people getting rich, they get to keep their hands clean, because you're not mad at them. You're mad at Karen on Facebook who shared that meme. I don't know about you, but I remember when people used to actually talk to their neighbors. But now we all sit alone in our homes, if you have a home, getting our daily dose of algorithmic rage delivered straight into our eyeballs. Our neighborhoods don't know each other. Our communities are strangers. And we live in these echo chamber bubbles of confirmation bias. So the bottom line here is that isolated people are easier to control. So a million isolated, angry people addicted to their phones, no problem. A million people who actually know each other and can organize, that's a nightmare scenario for anyone trying to stay in charge. And this is why every time a real movement starts to cross party lines, like Occupy Wall Street or some of the anti-war movements, labor strikes that actually matter, some of the civil rights movements, it just gets smeared into oblivion, or it just quietly, conveniently disappears from the news cycle. They don't care if you're team red, blue, purple, or whatever. They only care if you stop fighting each other long enough to notice who's actually ruining society. So some people have asked me if there's going to be a second civil war. And as I've mentioned before, I think we're already in one. But it's one that consists primarily of algorithms and psychological operations designed to exhaust you into submission. I would call it a war of attrition that's being fought with memes and misinformation. And the shittiest part is that we're doing most of the work for them. And of course, the tech is only getting better at this. I mean, we're already seeing that AI can create fake videos that look completely real, fake social media accounts that seem totally human. It's all over the internet. I mean, already, nobody knows what's real anymore. And it's creating a crisis of trust. And if you can't trust anything you see or hear, what does that do to a society, a civilization? I mean, we're already there. You don't know if the person pissing you off online is even a real person or just some bot created by a billionaire's think tank to keep you distracted. And your rage will literally be factory farmed. Here's another thing. We're not just victims of this. We're volunteers. Because we're handing over our data as if we're getting paid for it. We click every piece of outrage bait, and then we argue with strangers about nothing. And the machine gives us little dopamine hits to keep us coming back. It's the ultimate scam. They got us to work for them for free. And we think we're having fun. Now, look, if you're feeling a little hopeless right now, well, congratulations, because it means you're paying attention. But don't park there, because despair is also a product that they're selling us. When you give up, you're easier to market to. You're easier to control. You buy more stuff to fill the void. Now, the one thing this whole system absolutely cannot handle is people actually working together across the fake divisions they've created. That's why they spend billions convincing you that other broke, overworked people are your real enemy. And they've been doing this for decades and decades. Because if regular people ever stopped fighting each other and looked up to see who's actually running the whole show, the people at the top would lose their minds. Okay. Well, here's the bad news. The cavalry isn't coming. There's no secret conclave of wise elders in a wood-paneled room plotting how to rescue us. At least none that I know of. So it appears to me that we are the elders in the wood-paneled room, which is kind of a scary thought. And the room's on fire, and the paneling is made of tinder. Every time someone asks, so what's the solution? I wish I could hand them a nice little blueprint, a 5-point plan, an app you can download, a TED talk that will change everything in 12 minutes. But sadly, I don't. And if the last half century has taught us anything, it's that the cavalry isn't Silicon Valley. They're the ones renting you the horse by the hour and charging you extra for the saddle. But here is one thing that has worked before. And it's the one thing that the people at the top still secretly fear. Solidarity. Now, I'm not talking about the bumper sticker variety or the hashtag of the week kind. I'm talking about the slow, stubborn face-to-face kind. The kind where people have to put their egos away and start to look at things with a more honest and clear perspective. I'm talking about the kind where people who don't even like each other stop long enough to realize they're being shaken down by the same regime. So Howard Zinn wrote that you can't be neutral on a moving train. And what he meant is that history isn't something happening to you while you watch Netflix. You're on the train. You can help steer, or you can at least pull the brake. And Chris Hedges keeps saying the only power we still have is the power to refuse. And this is often one I say as well. I mean, my motto is basically just say no. Varoufakis talks about building cooperative platforms outside the digital castles. Chomsky reminds us that even small acts of resistance still matter because they do puncture the illusion of inevitability. Even though it may seem hopeless. Now, none of them are selling a utopia here. They're describing the mechanics of leverage. So what does that look like in practice? Well, it isn't glamorous. It's workers organizing across political lines. It's supporting independent, non-corporate media and refusing to feed algorithms that are just designed to run on outrage. It's walking out of the comment section, deleting social media, ignoring toxic news feeds, and talking to an actual human. It's remembering the guy you think of as the enemy is probably also one medical bill away from bankruptcy. In other words, it's tedious human work. It ain't sexy. It requires some vulnerability and some sacrifice. But that's exactly why it's powerful. Now look, I'm not naive. I'm well aware that we may already be too far gone. You know, the damage has been done. The wealth gap is wider than the Grand Canyon. The digital silos are so tall, we can't even see each other anymore. Totalitarianism is already here in the U.S. The algorithms are writing their own playbooks. The U.S., it might very well already be in a slow-motion civil war. And nobody declared it because nobody had to. But I think it's worth noting that history isn't a straight line. It's more like a Mobius strip or a crazy loop. Empires collapse, but people inevitably survive. And power shifts hands. New stories get written. Sometimes, out of sheer exhaustion, ordinary people stop fighting each other and finally look up. It's rare, but it does happen. And when it does, the whole game can change overnight. Now, I'm not here to sell you optimism. I'm here to sell you awareness. Awareness is what makes you harder to manipulate. Awareness is the first hairline crack in the illusion. And once you see the strings, the puppet show loses some of its magic. And then you can decide if you still want to clap or just get up and walk out. Now, here's what I've been trying. And not because I'm virtuous, but because I'm tired of being a mark in someone else's con. I stopped sharing every outrage that hits my feed. I started reading actual books again. Not just headlines on a screen. I started practicing critical thinking. Which, these things take some discipline. Sometimes I talk to people I disagree with. And yeah, it can be shitty. But sometimes it's startlingly human. And every time I do, I see it like this. The algorithm loses a tiny bit of power. And if you're wondering where to even start, it doesn't have to be anything heroic. And look, as always, I'm not the guy with all the answers here, but these are some of the things I do to help mitigate the situation, however small they may be. So support local and independent media instead of these corporate propaganda machines. Talk to and organize with people who might not necessarily be in your algorithmic bubble. Stop amplifying outrage bait just because it's entertaining or whatever. Push for campaign finance and lobbying reform wherever you can. Favor cooperatives, unions and mutual aid groups over corporate platforms that just feed on division. Or I don't know. If all that sounds overwhelming, at the very least, just say no. Spend a lot less time online. Stop buying shit you don't need. Stop participating in online comment section arguments. You know, have more real life interactions. And eventually, you will start to detox. You'll start to develop a clearer perspective of what you were caught up in and how it's been manipulating you. Now, none of these are silver bullets. I get that. But they are ways of starving the machine while you try to build something else. In solidarity, it isn't kumbaya or whatever. It's self-defense. It's the one lever we have left when all the official ones have been bought. And yeah, I mean, maybe it's just too damn late. But if we go down, at least we go down looking at each other in the eye instead of our friggin' phones. Look, I don't necessarily see the divided states of America as a prophecy. It's more like a mirror. It shows us who we are, who we've become. And, you know, like any mirror, you can either smash it or you can use it to check your face before you walk out the door. But either way, the house is still on fire. At least now you have some idea where the exits are. All right, I can't think of anything else right now. But as always, thanks for watching.